Well, hi there, everyone. This is Dave DeBoe. Welcome to this episode of the Property Profits Podcast. And today it is my pleasure to be talking with Edna Keep. And Edna is someone that I've known of for many, many, many years. I've known for many years. And she is a phenomenal real estate entrepreneur and coach. And this is definitely a lady who walks her talk. She and her husband, Warren, have been focusing on multifamily properties for quite a few years, and they've now built up a very significant portfolio of, I believe it was over 520 doors in your portfolio at this time. Is that correct, Edna?
Yeah, that's correct, yeah.
All right, so you definitely know what you're talking about, especially with multifamily investing. And the very cool thing about this is that the vast majority of those properties have been purchased with investor partners, joint venture partners. So Edna and her husband bring their expertise to the table. Their joint venture partners bring the money to the table and they share the profits. So Edna, I'm very excited to be chatting with you today.
And I'm excited to be on, Dave. This sounds like a great podcast.
Excellent. So let's rewind a few years, Edna, and tell us a little bit about how you first got excited and inspired and motivated to take action with real estate.
Well, my background's as a financial advisor. So I was a financial advisor for 15 years. And I sold mutual funds. All my investments were in mutual funds. And I just got tired of all the ups and downs of the market. And I thought I needed to diversify. So we actually signed up for a course with Rich Dad, Poor Dad. We went the traditional route, the evening class, then into the weekend class. And at the weekend class, we knew that we wanted to do more about it. And so we spent $27,000
wow.
and signed up for the coaching program through them. That was in June of 2007. In September, we bought our first condo. We actually did use our own money, if you call the equity out of our own home money. Mm-hmm. And we have our third property we did with other people's money. We ended up buying a up-down duplex with the seller actually left her all her money in so that it covered the down payment. So all we had to pay was the closing costs. And we still own that property today. As a matter of fact, we very seldom sell. We mostly just buy. And we're still actively buying today, just closing on 41 units actually today in northern Saskatchewan. So we're very excited. When I understood how real estate worked, I couldn't even sell mutual funds anymore. I sold my practice within 2 years of learning about real estate and never looked back. And, you know, I was making good money doing that. At that time, I was probably making on average $25,000 a month. So a lot of people thought I was crazy to mm-hmm. give up what I built. And, you know, when I started, I never planned on giving it up. But like I said, when I got to understand how real estate worked, it made no sense for me to sell mutual funds anymore. Just couldn't even do it.
Yeah, well, that makes sense. And I've heard that a lot. I remember when I first was trying to figure out what the heck I was going to do when I came back to Canada after living overseas for a long time. My big brother at that time was a financial planner, aka mutual fund salesperson.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
yeah. So maybe I'll take a crack at that. So I went through and actually did the course, passed it by the skin of my teeth. But then I was diving in, looking at this stuff, and this mutual fund thing just didn't click with me. It didn't really, it sounds good, but by the yeah. time you take into account all the fees, the expenses, all that kind of stuff, I don't think most people do very well with those kind of investments. So I'm glad you came over from the dark side, Edna.
Me too. Well, you know what? I always say it all depends where you're getting your education from.
Yeah.
And it's like a doctor. The reason we get prescriptions every time we go to the doctor is because they're trained by pharmaceutical companies. And I was trained by mutual fund companies. And so I drank the Kool-Aid and I 100% believed in them, focused on it, and was very adamant at the beginning that everybody should be a mutual fund. You know, it just made sense to me. And I put all my own money there. So it was easy to convince other people to do the same. But yeah, I took the blinders off and took the step out into the unknown and learned some pretty good stuff.
And you haven't looked back since, that's for sure.
No.
Oh, that's wonderful. So you and Warren started off self-financing like most people do at the beginning, and then I don't know if it was a case of running out of money for down payments or running out of credit, but eventually you had to start working with joint venture partners or investors. How did that come about? Now, obviously, through years of financial planning, you're kind of comfortable talking with people about investing their money, but how did you make that transition? At what point?
Well, we knew after our second property that we wanted to keep spending some money on education. So we knew we needed to start raising capital right away. And like I said, we did that for a third property. But what I found is we actually joint venture partnered with somebody who had about 2 years more experience than we did. And that took a lot of our fear away. You know, we'd learned about this couple at one of our Robert Kiyosaki events, the very first one. And at the end, when it came time to make the choice, do we just walk away and do whatever we want to do with what we learned today, or do we want to continue our education? We just decided, well, who did we want to be like? Do we want to be like the people who now own 20 doors 2 years later? Or do we want to be like the people who never did anything? Right. And we wanted to own something. So we actually met them within the next year and got to be good friends. And so we actually brought money to the table and we were their joint venture partner and they were property managers. So that helped us because we were always terrified of tenants and toilets, just never wanted to deal with that kind of stuff. And that's where I really found my niche, which was I like dealing with investors. And that was where my value came into is I was very good at dealing with investors, both bringing them in and looking after them throughout the whole term. And so shortly after that, we started doing our own joint ventures and bringing in the investors. We still don't like to be the managing partner. We like to bring in investors and a managing partner. And so then that way we can just focus on what we like to do best,
which is finding the deals and finding the investors.
Yeah.
Well, that's very, very smart. So you actually kind of have a three-way kind of a setup with most of your deals. Is that what I'm understanding?
Yes, correct.
Interesting. Interesting. Okay.
Yeah, and you know what? I think that's the biggest thing that's allowed us to grow, because I see people getting stuck in property management and they're so busy that they can't do the stuff that they need to grow. Plus, they're so frustrated dealing with tenants and toilets all the time that they probably lose all will to grow. And we've stayed away from that end right from the start. Never, ever. My oldest daughter does most of our property management. Mm. And I don't even want to hear about it from her. I tell her, you know, just send me the friggin' bill. I don't want to hear the story because it just makes me mad. And, because I can't imagine. I rented for years as a single mom. Never, ever missed a rent payment. Could not even imagine missing a rent payment. So when that happens, it absolutely drives me crazy. So I need that arm's length so I don't
need that buffer.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, that's very cool. So again, getting off on a little bit of a tangent here, but very, very curious. So do you and your husband focus on finding the deals, or do you also do you have the managing partners kind of coming to you saying, hey, you guys, I found a really good deal, but I need some hand raising the capital for it? How do you typically come across your deals nowadays?
Well, when we started, our joint venture partner brought most of the deals to us. Right. And then when we stopped working together, a couple students that we'd met at their very first training, father-daughter couple, they approached us. And the very first apartment deal we did, they had an apartment building and they said, Edna, we'll give you 75% if you bring the capital to the table. And I thought, well, that's a pretty good deal. So they wanted to keep 25%. And it was my first foray into that. So I took 10% of the deal and gave the investor 65%.
Okay.
And then I learned real quick that it wasn't worth it for me to do that. So from then on, it's 20 to 30% that I'll take of a deal if I've got to raise all the capital for it. And I always tell my students, even nowadays, I say, I'd rather own 25% of four buildings than 100% of one, because you know what? We own a couple buildings here in our city. We thought, we'll be smart. We raise all the money. Why don't we just manage it? It doesn't look that hard. We'll just manage it ourselves. And you know what? Those are my two most least favorite properties I own, because I hate managing them.
Well, that's because you got your daughter to do that stuff for you now, right?
Well, she still does all the property management, but I got to oversee the reports. I got to oversee, you know, and I got to have the conversations with her if we are experiencing vacancy. I got to have the conversations about buying the boiler, you know, different stuff like that.
Right.
And it's not my strength to work in those areas. Going forward, I don't want to buy any more buildings unless I have
a enough. So it sounds to me like now, and correct me if I'm wrong, the managing partner gets somewhere around 30% of the deal. you and your husband are getting somewhere in the 20 to 30% of the deal for raising the capital. And then your investor partners are getting roughly a third to 40% of the deal. Is that about how it works?
Roughly, yeah. Now, we've done anything from 30, 30, and 40 for the investors. Yeah. This last deal that we did, actually, because we had vendor financing and we had CMHC financing, which means we only have put 15% down, nice. We had to raise just a small amount of capital. So we own 45% of the deal. Our managing partner owns 25% of the deal, and one of our other partners who's gonna oversee like the books and stuff, he owns 20% of the deal. So between us, we own 90% of the deal.
And the investors have 10% of the deal.
Yeah, because we didn't have to raise very much money because we had a really good chunk of vendor take back. So you get some of those deals that work really well that way.
Yeah, definitely. No, that's very, very smart. And now with that, with all those years in financial planning, I mean, that was awesome training for you and meeting people and talking with people and the sales process and all that kind of good stuff. Yes. And I know now you're really out there as a coach. You're a very, very popular coach, very successful coach. And that's because you do a really good job with your clients, as well as you're a trainer and you run a real estate investment group in Regina. What do you find to be nowadays the best way for you to meet new joint venture partners or investor partners? How do you find money partners for your deals?
You know what, right now, and this kind of surprised me, but in the last year, we've actually attracted a lot of our investors right through my my course called 90 Days to 5K. So we advertise the course, we do strategy calls with people. Sometimes people go, you know, this totally makes sense for me, but I think it's too much work for me. Can I just invest with you? And I do a lot of podcasts like this where people get to know me a little bit and reach out and say, hey, put me on your mailing list. And then from there, things start to happen. So yeah, surprisingly so, a lot of them from the students.
Interesting. So do you have like a minimum amount that you want to have from investors? I mean, when I'm talking with my clients and my students, I'm kind of saying, you know, the fewer investors involved in a deal, the better, because then you got not so many chefs in the kitchen kind of thing. What are your thoughts on that?
Absolutely. We go for a minimum of 100,000. The odd time we'll let somebody in at a lesser amount, like 50,000 or something. And usually the reason we will is if that person we think is going to bring something good to the table, like maybe introductions to other investors, a student I just really want to work with, I admire immensely, I want to give them a break to get started, you know, stuff like that. And in those cases, you know, if they only have 50,000, it's worth it to me, because it also, and this is, this happened for us, we learned how to sell joint ventures by being in a joint venture. Right. And that's one of the things I say to my students. If you sit on this side of the table as a joint venture partner, then it's going to be easier for you to sell to somebody to become your joint venture partner, because you've done it and you've seen the reward.
Right. And you can do it with integrity, right? You've been in their shoes, literally.
Yeah.
Very, very interesting. So, and I know neither one of us are lawyers or security. Well, you're definitely more of a security specialist than the average person, because you've got a lot of background in that. What is your take, and what are your suggestions for people to stay on the good side of their not so friendly local securities commission?
Well, there's three exemptions that we stay within. It's either accredited investors, a minimum of $150,000 investment, friends, family, or business associates. Those are the three exemptions that we stay within at all times. So that's the part. And then just the whole joint venture keeps you in safety. Like our clients are usually on the mortgage, on the title, everything with us. Not always, you know, as we're getting bigger, sometimes now they don't even ask us for everybody else to be on mortgage and title. This Metal 8 deal, only myself and the one other major partner had to go give personal guarantees and all that kind of stuff, which was nice. But in that joint venture partnership is a big protection too.
Definitely, definitely. Okay, well, thank you very much. That's great there. So let's rewind a little bit. And when you were first bringing on, I mean, now you've got your podcast, you've got your coaching, you've got your courses, you've got all this good stuff. But back in the day, 2007, when you guys were first getting started, you didn't have any of that, I don't think. No. So what did you do for getting your first few investors on board? What was the trick there?
We offered a really high rate of return and we delivered. That was the biggest thing. So when we started out, it was friends and family. I had given up my mutual fund license so that I could get into this because I couldn't do both, the conflict. So when I very first started, it was only family. Like I have some brothers and some cousins and stuff that had some money and they could invest with me. But shortly after that, I gave up my license and then it could go with business associates and stuff. I also had a few clients that were interested in real estate from my mutual fund days. And so we started working with them. But the biggest thing we did is when we offered a return and the first bit we did, it was a percentage interest. And when we paid that out, we got referrals and people kept coming back to us. And even to today, that's a big source of, like, I don't do advertising or anything. I don't do much for marketing for investors anymore. Like I said, a lot of them that are coming through us are students because mostly I advertise for my coaching and my training, but all repeat investors. Like, when we were at about 400 doors, I calculated it out, and I believe that we had built it to there with 21 investors that repeat invested with us again and again. And they would find money, even after they said they had no more money, they would find money, or they'd refer us to people and stuff like that. So if you can keep your investors happy, and I have my own unique way of doing that, I think because I had 15 years of dealing with that already, then I think you don't have to be chasing for investors all the time.
Definitely not. Not once you get the trend. You started the snowball, right?
Yeah, exactly.
That's what happened. Yeah. No, that's beautiful.
And they tell a friend and that's really nice. And you know, I still prefer dealing with that inner circle because the odd time I do get approached by people who know somebody who knows somebody who knows somebody. And I just don't find those people easy to deal with. Like I'm not a detailed person. I'm big picture. Kind of, we talked about that a little bit this weekend, like you, I'm big picture. So when I get approached by people who need all these details, it kind of drives me crazy. And I just go, I just don't think we're a good fit because you won't get that from me up front. And you won't get that from me in a year. And you won't get that from me in 10 years. So if you need that, I'm not your best person. You know, I have a lot of people who are analytical, but I also have a lot of team members who can handle them. You know, I have a cousin that is so analytical, I refuse to talk to him anymore. Not that I don't love him, I do, but I actually referred him over to my business partner, George, because I go, you got to deal with this guy. He asked me way too many questions. And it's kind of funny because I don't enjoy it. I don't enjoy, like, I know my numbers inside and out, but I don't enjoy delving into all that, you know, with every
single thing.
Yeah.
That makes sense.
I always say I like to keep my life easy. And if I think you're an investor that's not going to be easy, I won't deal with you. I don't need to.
Life's too short.
It is too short.
And if they're a pain in the ass to start with, they're just going to be a bigger pain in the butt the longer you deal with them.
Exactly. At least that's been my experience. And I have fired clients before too when they started out being nice people and they turned out to not be nice people, I just fire them. Because again, I don't need that shit in my life.
Preaching to the choir here. So, and now you've been around a lot of real estate investors for a long time now between your real estate investment group that you run in Regina, all your students and your clients and people that you meet through your courses and whatnot. What would you think, looking back, what do you think are some of the biggest mistakes you see people making when it comes to raising capital for their deals?
Well, one is people get to understand the return that they get on real estate. And so they start sharing that with investors. And it scares a lot of people off because the number's so high. Yeah. And so you have to really tone that down. It's better to under-promise and over-deliver. Mm. And a lot of people, a lot of investors will not even sign on because if you tell them, you know, we're going to earn 40% on this deal, they will think automatically that there's something wrong with it or it's too high risk. So you have to be really careful there.
Makes it, well, you know what, and it's actually a very good thing because then that makes it so much easier for you to over deliver, right? So if you throw them out a number that they're comfortable with and then you exceed that, that's how you keep getting those referrals, right?
Yes, that's exactly
okay, right. So people offering, talking about percentages that are just out of the context of the average person. Any other big screw-ups you see people making? Like I see sometimes people advertising on Kijiji or things like that, guaranteed, you know, 70% return on your money. What kind of things like that do you see that are big red flags?
Well, I haven't seen a lot of that, and maybe because that was so pounded into us when we were sold mutual funds, you can't say guarantee on anything. Mm-hmm. But some of the other things I think is a lot of people don't know how to structure a deal to make money for everybody. That's another big one I see. And they don't know how to present a deal. So I've done this with people. I do a 3-day event in my town, my city. And at that event, I have a Dragon's Den panel, but yeah, all on real estate, right? Yes. So I put some of my students up there or some of my speakers. A lot of times it's my speakers that are the dragons, and they understand real estate because they've been in it for a long time. And the students will come up, or people from the audience will come up and present a deal. And just like on Dragon's Den, some of them don't have a clue how to present a deal. They ramble, they go on and on, they don't have their numbers down pat. And that's another thing I see as a big time issue. And then the last one is, I'm broke. You got money. I just signed up for a real estate course. You want to invest with me? That's another big one. You got to build a team. And then if you don't have the experience, your team has the experience. So going it alone, trying to do things on your own. I mean, would you invest if I said, hey, Dave, I'm broke. I got no money, but you got money. You want to invest with me? I just took this course.
And I'll experiment with your money. How about that?
Experiment with your money. Yes.
We'll learn together. That doesn't sound too appealing. Very, very interesting, Edna. That's fantastic. There's a little question for you. I mean, you actually, well, you didn't do this, but pretty close. So let's say we took everything away from you. Okay, except for your knowledge, and you were starting all over from scratch. And let's even make it a little bit more difficult that you don't even have your current contacts. So you're kind of just having to jump like new city, new everything. And if you had to raise $500,000 for a deal, and let's say fairly quickly, within 90 days, keeping within, you know, the parameters that we've been talking about here, what do you think you'd do to accomplish that? And I'm kind of throwing you on the spot there, but yeah, just to get your feedback.
You know what? I would go to a networking event. I would go to a networking event that caters to real estate investors, like RAIN, like our one in Regina called Prague. I think you guys have some in Kelowna too. Like there is real estate investment groups in every single city just about out there. I would start there and I would see who the players were. I'd talk to the speakers. I would talk to the ones who had already done what I wanted to do. And I would get around them and I'd find out things. And I'd start looking for deals. I'd network with the right mortgage brokers, the right realtors. I'd build a power team very, very first. And then from there, I'd start sharing the deals in the networking groups.
Yeah, exactly. And then probably do what you're talking about, which is where you give a good chunk of that first deal away, perhaps, and a very good return on people's money just to get back in the game.
Yeah, absolutely. That's one of the things I tell the students, you know, the very first apartment deal that came to me, I gave away, you know, it brought to me saying, I'll give you 75% to raise the money. I gave away 65% of it and got 10. I still own that building. And it's a reminder of why I wouldn't do that again, but I got my first one, you know?
Yeah. Got one under your belt. That's phenomenal. Yeah. Edna, this has been a blast. I really, really appreciate chatting with you and you sharing so much of your experience. Look forward to talking with you again in the future, because we're doing kind of different episodes on different things. Today was more focused on capital and investor partners, but in the future, I might have a chat with you about, because you've got a plethora of experience, but how you find deals, how you find your power team members, those kind of things. So if you're open for that sometime down the road, love to chat with you again.
Yeah. Absolutely. I love sharing my knowledge. That's one of my things. Learn, grow, share.
Exactly. So Edna, if people are interested in finding out a little bit more about you, perhaps having a chat with you, seeing if your courses are something that they'd be interested in, which again, I'd highly recommend, what's the best way to reach out to you? How would you like people to contact you?
Well, my website is ednakeep.com. My email address is edna@ednakeep.com. And those are probably the two best ways. And all you have to do is remember my name. You can reach out to me on Facebook, Messenger, LinkedIn. I think I'm the only Edna Keep out there.
That's a nice, easy to spell name, right?
So I know.
Well, there you go. So I highly recommend that if you're interested in, especially if you're interested in getting into multifamily properties, Edna's got a very, very good training program. Check it all out and reach out to Edna, ednakeep.com. Edna, thank you very much for your time today. It's been great.
Thank you, Dave. You're a real pleasure to talk to.
Take care. Well, thanks very much for checking out the Property Profits podcast. And if you like what we're doing here, please head on over to iTunes, subscribe, rate us, and leave us a review. Be very, very much appreciated. And if you're looking to create a regular flow of inbound investor inquiries about your real estate deals, then I invite you to attend one of my upcoming live online demonstrations. And you can check that out at investorattractiondemo.com. Take care.